The views and discussion expressed on this program are for general information only and do not necessarily represent those of the host of the program or that of Faith and Friends Radio, its staff and management. Discussion of specific points and general topics on this program are not meant to be taken as specific professional advice. Please check with your doctor on these issues.
Welcome to Your Holistic Health on Faith and Friends Radio. Your host is Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum of RX Integrative Solutions. Stay tuned as we examine different aspects of holistic wellness. Here is your host, Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum.
Hello and welcome to Your Holistic Health, coming to you from the studios of Faith and Friends Radio in Dayton, Ohio. This is your host, Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum, Holistic Clinical Pharmacist of RX Integrative Solutions. On today's program, we'll be talking with Richard Louvre, author of the book entitled Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. Each week, Your Holistic Health presents evidence-based, practical tips on how to integrate body, mind, and spiritual principles into everyday living. We'll turn to Scripture to give us perspective on every discussion, focused on wellness and prevention, because we believe that God is a central part of the healing process. In the news this week, here's some information from the December 2012 issue of Prevention, talking about easy stress solutions, new findings that reveal quick ways to reduce tension and can change our brain and body for the better. I just picked a few. First of all, put on a happy face. Smiling soothes us and soothes others, even if we're just going through the motions. A University of Wisconsin study found that people who'd had Botox injections were less prone to anger because they simply couldn't express it. What's the lesson? Well, just smile. It doesn't matter if you really feel that way or you don't. It's a healthy situation and a healthy choice. Number two, donate some dollars. Giving money to a good cause makes us feel better than buying a pair of designer jeans. That's according to Michael Norton of Harvard Business School. Giving for others and to others is an easy, quick, healthy choice and one that can be far-reaching. And finally, and this is in keeping with our theme tonight, go outside and dig in the dirt. According to a 2011 Dutch study published in the Journal of Health Psychology, just 30 minutes of gardening reduces stress levels even more effectively than 30 minutes of reading quietly in a room. Isn't that amazing? Now, I'm not saying don't read, because that's a great pastime and a great healthy choice as well. But dig some dirt, whether you're a gardener or not, just dig. Now it's time to introduce our guest. Richard Louvre is a prolific author. He's written 7 books, one of which we're going to talk about tonight. It's a national bestseller. It's called Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children and Our Grandchildren from Nature Deficit Disorder. Richard is also the chairman of the Children and Nature Network, and I'm hoping he's going to tell us a little bit about that tonight as well. Welcome, Richard, to Your Holistic Health.
Well, thank you.
Here's some information from the May 2012 issue of Wall Street Journal. It's entitled, Mom Was Right, Go Outside. Forget the bugs, your brain will sigh with relief. Here's some interesting stats. So the American children today, between the ages of 8 and 18, currently spend, how much would you think, more than how many hours a day interacting with technology? The answer is 4. I would have guessed more. As a result, there's really not a lot of time for nature. From 2006 to 2010, the percentage of young people regularly engaging in outdoor recreation fell by roughly 15 percentage points. Richard, what do you think about that, and how did you get interested in nature?
Sure. Well, first, that your instinct that there are more hours spent with electronics, you're correct. I'm not sure what study that one that you're quoting is, but the Kaiser Family Foundation has done two surveys, major surveys. The first one, a few years ago, they found that kids were spending an average of 44 hours a week plugged into some kind of electronic entertainment medium. And just about 3 years ago, they updated that same study and found that the number had gone up to over 54 hours a week plugged into some kind of electronic entertainment medium. So when you count up all the texting, all the stuff that is done, it's quite high. Now, it's quite high for adults, too. And this doesn't mean, however, that one has to be anti-tech to be pro-nature. There's a phrase that is in the new book that I have out called The Nature Principle, and the phrase is, the more high-tech our lives become, the more nature we need.
Well, it's all about balance, and that's certainly in keeping with the theme of this show. And going back to the Wall Street, they go on to say that it's essential that we explore those parts of the world that weren't designed for us. And it's when we're lost in the wild, I love this line, when we're lost in the wild, that the mind is finally at home. What is nature deficit disorder, and how come we need it? How come we need nature?
Well, there's a quote from a poet who said that when we lose sight or lose our connection to nature, we become what he called cosmic outlaws. We are not only hurting ourselves, but we end up hurting the natural world, which of course hurts us in the long run too. So nature deficit disorder is not a known medical diagnosis. Probably it should be, but it's not. What it is a kind of a shorthand, a handy way to talk about this disconnection between children and nature that we've been seeing, and we didn't really much have a language to talk about it. The book Last Child in the Woods came out in 2005. Since then, that phrase has entered the language, primarily because we needed a way to talk about what we already intuitively knew. Now, in terms of the impacts of that, at the same time that studies were coming out showing the extreme disengagement between children and nature, unlike any time in history or prehistory, at the same time that research was coming out, there was another body of evidence that was emerging that showed just how great nature was for children's healthy development, both psychological development and physical development, and I would argue spiritual development as well. And so when you look at how many ways that human beings profit or are made healthier by a connection to nature, and then you ask, well, what would it be like if that connection were taken away? What would happen to people's mental health, their physical health? That's what nature deficit disorder is, the price that we pay for our alienation from nature.
Well, I think there's a price as an individual, unbeknownst to these children, because, of course, their parents are their keepers, if you will, and their guides and mentors for so many years. But I think there's a collective price to pay as a society. And I would argue that our nation is kind of going down a slippery slope here, perhaps even the world, for that matter, to a certain extent. But in terms of creativity loss, I mean, we were just talking before the show how in our generation, we didn't even question the fact that the door opened at, 8 o'clock in the morning. We were let loose or whatever, and just turned out to our own devices to explore and to create. And if you came home at 5 and you were at the dinner table, it was a great day. I wonder where is that creativity going? Do you think there's an issue there?
Well, there is. I mean, there are several ways to talk about that. Some very recent research down at the University of Kansas found, they looked at young people backpacking, and they found that after 3 days of backpacking, and they tested them before they went and after they came back, and they factored out the whole issue of, you know, the good stuff that exercise alone does for us. And they only looked at the impacts of being outside in the natural world, and they found that these young people's mental acuity, their ability to think clearly, abilities in that area were startlingly improved, and that creativity went up 50% after they got back. It seemed that the effects of this seemed to peak at three days. But there's also
Well, I think problem solving is something that just pops in my mind. I remember a time when, I was maybe 6 or 7 the very first time this happened, wanting to go and just go out in the backyard and lie on the grass and look up at the heavens, and was raised, you know, in a faith-based home. And I would just begin to ponder about the concept of eternity or all the stars, the galaxies, not knowing a lot, but just that connection with the universe prompted, if you will, a very thoughtful, deep concern that I then came in and began to express and was, you know, I guess worked through and helped me grow as a person, where that connection to the universe, I mean, I truly believe that we have skills and concerns and questions that are not going to be addressed if we're constantly micromanaging tasks through technology. Although one could argue that there's a universe on Google or there's a universe on the internet, we don't tend to look at it that way all the time, do you think?
Well, I agree. And by the way, the reason I lost track of what I was saying is because as we speak, we're putting in a new backyard that will have natural native plants that will qualify as the National Wildlife Federation backyard habitat, and they're making noise out there. So,
well, we're coming to your house, Richard. When we're done here, we're all going to come get on a plane and come to your place.
Yeah, so I apologize for any background noise.
That's right.
The most important word in Last Child in the Woods, and the most important word, I think, in The Nature Principle, which is the new book, and it's more about adults, is the word wonder. You know, if you just described, you know, that sense of awe and wonder that we tend to get when we're exposed to, a universe beyond our family realm, or beyond the television, or beyond the internet. You know, many people, perhaps like me, remember one of their first memories might have been crawling out through the weeds to where the rocks crawling out through the grass to where the weeds and the rocks and the trees began, and perhaps at 3 or 4 years old, turning over a rock and finding out for the first time that you're not alone in the universe, and really that sense of awe and wonder the first time you hear wind in trees. Creativity, all spiritual life, I believe, begins with a sense of wonder. How in the world can we cut that off from our children? There's a theory in play theory called loose parts theory holds that the more loose parts there are in an environment that kids can manipulate and move around, the more creative the play is. And that's certainly been found playgrounds that are natural playgrounds compared to the flat turf or cement playgrounds. The creativity goes way up. Kids are far more likely to invent their own games in a natural play area. The loose parts theory would suggest that nature is a pretty big holder of loose parts. When kids sit in front of a television and play Grand Theft Auto, they are dependent on the loose parts, and there are a lot of them in those games, but they're dependent on the limitations of some guy sitting in Silicon Valley in front of a computer programming that game. You know, a guy sitting there probably had too much pizza. That's not exactly the kind of environment or the production of a kind of environment that inspires awe and wonder. When you go out into nature, you are far more likely to be using all of your senses at the same time as you are sitting inside with a computer or watching television. Much of our lives now are designed to have us limit the amount of incoming information. I actually talk about the disappearing information age, that when you sit in front of a television, you have a kind of tunnel vision, literally vision, where you're trying to block out incoming information from your ears and all your other senses so that you can focus on that screen. When you go outside into nature, it's a wholly different thing. The scientists who study the human senses no longer talk about five senses. They talk about as many as, conservatively, 10 senses and as many as 30 senses, most of which we don't use. So by definition, when you're outside in nature, more likely to use more of those senses. You're taking in more information. You are being inspired by more of the universe. And in fact, I believe you're more alive. Mm. So by taking that away, that sense of wonder and the full use of the senses away from children or away from us as adults, we are creating a situation which both children and adults are being less alive. I don't think any of us want our kids to be less alive.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break here in just a moment, Richard. And when we come back, I'm going to focus in on being alive spiritually and what nature can do to help us benefit in that regard. If you're just joining our show, this is Your Holistic Health. Tonight we're talking with Richard Louvre about his book entitled Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. We'll be right back.
Your Holistic Health is brought to you by RX Integrative Solutions. Many Americans are taking prescription medications and wish they could find a way to take less. 42% of us have tried some type of complementary or holistic practice, including vitamins and other dietary supplements. Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum of RX Integrative Solutions provides personalized consultations to review your prescription medications and dietary supplements and helps you find a simpler, back-to-basics way to health. She'll work in partnership with your primary care physician. For more information or to sign up for a consultation, visit rxintegrativesolutions.com. That's rxintegrativesolutions.com.
We're back, and you're listening to a broadcast of Your Holistic Health on Faith and Friends Radio in Dayton, Ohio. I'm Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum, and tonight we're talking with Richard Louvre, author of Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. So, Richard, before the break, we talked a little bit about using up to 30 senses, which is just incredible to me, in nature, and how fulfilling and alive one should certainly be or feel in so doing, being outside. And now I think I want to just focus a bit more on how those senses can draw one to the divine or draw one out spiritually. And I'm going to tee that up with a scripture, a verse from Job, and this is from chapter 12, verses 7 through 10, and it's about the information that Mother Earth and all of its inhabitants actually give a child, or those of us who choose to be in nature. And it goes like this: "But ask the animals, and they will teach you, or the birds of the air, and they will tell you, or speak to the earth, and it will teach you. Or let the fish of the sea inform you. Which of all these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this? And in his hand is the life of every creature and the breath of all mankind." What is that spiritual breath in nature, in your opinion, Richard?
Well, in the first chapter of The Nature Principle, the new book, I talk about the name of the chapter is Singing for Bears, and I describe my younger son and I on Kodiak Island in Alaska walking up a stream that was overgrown, or that had thick bushes and trees on each side, a small stream, with a fishing guide. and fly fishing guide, and we were going up this stream, and the fly fishing guide taught us how to smell for bears. What you do when you're up there, and these are Alaskan brown bears, the kind that like to have you over for lunch, so you got to be very careful. You have to make a lot of noise. You do everything you're not supposed to do when you fish because you don't want to surprise them. So he said, but here's another skill that you need to know. You need to be able to smell bears. And these bears, once you smell it, you never forget it. It's a combination of bear musk and rotten salmon because they like to roll in the salmon.
Oh, great.
But it's a very peculiar odor. And if you smell that, that means one or two things. Either the bear is right there in the bushes or the bear just left. So this is a useful thing. My son's comment was, this sure beats high school. But I describe how my son and I later in that trip, we watched a confrontation between a big Alaskan brown bear and some wild horses that live on the island. And the wild horses were off in the distance and led by a palomino, the head of the group of these horses. And we watched a bear go down the beach and turn toward the horses. They had a little white colt with them. And the palomino reared up. And rather than running away, he ran straight at the bear. And the bear looked at his watch and said, you know, I've got an appointment over here, and he left. But I was standing there with my son and having this overwhelming feeling of how grateful I was that he was having this experience. Because in addition to all of those, you know, 10 to 30 senses that we tend to block out when we're not in connection with nature, there's another sense, and I talk about this at the end of the chapter, a sense of humility. Being in the presence of other animals, particularly those that are higher on the food chain than we are, you can't avoid having a sense of humility. Much of our lives is designed now to do just the opposite, to make us feel omnipotent, make us feel we can go anywhere and do anything in the world. But in the presence of the rest of nature, and we're not separate from nature, but the rest of nature, particularly when you're in a setting like that, as I say, you can't help but feel humble. I think that that is the beginning, or part of the beginning of wisdom, as well as that sense of awe and wonder. After Last Child in the Woods came out, I was worried. There's a chapter at the end of it called The Spiritual Necessity of Nature for Children. There's a similar chapter about adults in The Nature Principle. I was worried because I know that there are some religious people who might think that I am trying to get their kids to worship nature. I'm not doing that, but still I was concerned. I have a very conservative Christian friend who read the chapter. She's quoted in it. I really do want this issue to bring people together rather than push them apart, but I was still worried. After the book came out, I got no flack from religious quarters of any kind. In fact, one of the first champions of the book was the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. The 700 Club, Pat Robertson's show on Christian Broadcasting Network, invited me to be on their show. And they did a good job with this issue. So I think that all smart religious people or spiritual people intuitively know that all spiritual life begins with a sense of awe and wonder, and a sense of humility. Again, how can we take that away from future generations? You know, when we're canceling recess, when we're canceling field trips, when we're building neighborhoods where kids cannot step on the grass because they'll offend the covenants and restrictions of that particular development, when we're building an environment filled with so much fear, most of it not warranted, most of it created by my profession of journalism, when we're doing that to kids and forcing them indoors and essentially raising them under virtual protective house arrest, what are we doing for them in terms of their creativity? What are we doing to them in their sense of wonder? What are we doing to them in terms of their sense of humility? What are we doing to them in their sense of, being able to create, to be able to think independently? There's a whole set of studies on the ability to pay attention, but the ability to have what's called executive function, that voice inside you that says, you know, maybe not, it's not a good idea to follow your buddies over the cliff. It's being your own boss. There's a study done in the 1940s of executive function of children. That was repeated a few years ago. And that kids today, apparently, according to this study, a seven-year-old today has the executive function of a five-year-old in the 1940s. In other words, we've stripped away 2 years of healthy child development in terms of controlling oneself. What are we going to do to the future of the economy? Are we going to produce more entrepreneurs if we continue to do that, if we continue to make up rules for every minute of a child's life and have none of that, increasingly for children, very little of that affected by elements that produce humility and wonder?
Richard, we're in the closing moments of our show. I really want to get in a question about Children and Nature Network, and tell us more about how you are involved and what the mission of that organization is, please.
Sure, thank you. The Children and Nature Network is at childrenandnature.org, and it is a nonprofit that grew out of the first book, out of Last Child in the Woods, because I quickly became overwhelmed by a lot of demands and a lot of expectation. So some very good people banded together. And this has created a network of, now it's 111 regional and state and provincial campaigns that have grown up. There's at least two in Ohio, by the way, in Cincinnati and northern Ohio. These are regional campaigns to get kids outdoors. And over since 2009, when we first did an independent survey, these independent campaigns have gotten at least 8 million kids connected to nature. So you can go to this website. You can learn about that, but you can also learn about family nature clubs that are springing up all over the country. You can download a free toolkit to start your own with other families. This is catching on. If you're a teacher, there's all kinds of resources. If you're an academic or a journalist, there's a whole section of research. It's the best place on the internet or anywhere to go to see 200 abstracts of the 200 major studies on both the disconnection and the benefits. So we believe we're helping lead this movement that has emerged to connect children and nature, but, you know, beyond that, to connect all of us to nature for our health and well-being.
I love it. We're out of time, unfortunately. I'm going to have you back because I'm not done with questions for you. Children and Nature Network, Richard Louv, author of Last Child in the Woods, a national bestseller, and he being the recipient of the 2008 Audubon Medal, well-deserved. I'd like to wrap up our show with the quote of the week, and it's from Mark Twain. And I quote, "Be careful about reading health books. You might die of a misprint," end quote. Thanks so much again to our guest, Richard Louv, for being with us tonight. This is our host, your host, Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum, holistic clinical pharmacist of RX Integrative Solutions. You are invited to my website online at rxintegrativesolutions.com for a free library of health-related articles I've written just for you. Please tune in again next week at this same time to hear Meg Carver, Onani Mentor, talking about the power of positive thinking and our search for joy. On the next edition of Your Holistic Health, you are loved. Blessings and good night.
The views and discussion expressed on this program are for general information only and do not necessarily represent those of the host of the program or that of Faith and Friends Radio, its staff, and management. Please contact your healthcare provider for specific professional advice on these topics.
Thank you for being a part of our discussion today. Please join Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum each Friday, 6 p.m., on Faith and Friends Radio for Your Holistic Health.